You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I am your co-host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on all social media at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, please, 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 please follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. We are on Instagram with the same name. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is powered by Tumblr. You can get all previous 300-some-odd episodes there. Doc, what number are we on? Because I just went to some odd. I stopped counting.
It's too many. You just can't count that high anymore?
Don't do that.
No, that's like a flex. We are recording right now, episode 345.
Wow. 345. That's crazy. Okay. Episode 345. You can also get those previous episodes on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, everywhere you get podcasts except for You Know Where and You Know Why. And you just heard the man with the golden voice, Doc.
The man underscore with the golden voice. What's going on, everybody? You can follow me on Twitter if you want, at Doc underscore Beats, S not a Z. Same handle on Instagram. Yeah, man, how you doing? You got a new song out.
I do. It's available everywhere. It's called Woke, produced by my man SB.
So here's the question I have for you.
Okay.
So actually, let me ask you this. What's the reaction been like?
People really like it. People say it's one of my best songs.
Have you gotten anybody giving you pushback on content in it?
No, but I would like to for somebody other than you.
No. If anything, I mean, I'm going to sit here and say, if people are giving you pushback on this content, like, have they listened to the show?
Very true. I don't know. We're still trying to merge those two worlds together. Mm. There are definitely listeners of the podcast who do not listen to my music and vice versa. Exactly. So you and I have had these conversations at length.
Right.
Sometimes we're on the same team. Sometimes we're on opposite sides of the fence. But yeah, they should pretty much know. I want to try and create some more content for it. But man, I have so much going on right now. I don't have time. I'm going to at least do a lyric video of some sort. And maybe I'll do a vlog or something, breaking it down and talking about it. Like, I don't know. But I feel like that's something that needs to be unpacked. So I'm going to try and unpack it as best I can. This is more than just a retweet. Hey, listen to my song.
At the very least, get in there and do some Genius annotations.
Yeah, I could do those. The lyrics are on Genius. You can follow me there. Most of my lyrics are on there. Not all of them. The funny thing, have I talked about how people will correct my lyrics on Genius?
Oh, like they go in and they're like, no, this is wrong?
Yes, this is what he said.
Do they realize that it's you who put the lyrics there?
Yes, because shout out to friend of the show, Rob Markman. I'm verified on Genius, so it'll say lyrics uploaded by Armand Wake Up.
I mean, that's the internet though, right? It's
absolutely,
you know, there's a whole like thing that happens on Twitter sometimes where, unfortunately, this tends to happen when it is a woman who is an authority in some field, like a scientist or a doctor of some kind or something, who will offer like an opinion in their field that they are like super qualified to know about. And there's always a guy, and it's a guy always, unfortunately, who will be like, well, are you sure about this? Because X, Y, and Z. And then the person replies back and they're like, I'm a rocket scientist. Like, it's about rockets. You know what I mean? Because the internet makes everybody think that they're the expert.
At my job, they call that mansplaining, right? Is that the term?
Sure. I mean, mansplaining is like a real epidemic. Yes. Okay. I'm like incredibly guilty of it. I work on it all the time.
Yeah, the internet definitely, the information age has produced know-it-alls.
So right, because it's broken down like the barriers between the experts and the rest and the rest of us. So like,
correct.
There are, you know, what's expertise? And so in True. This case, people are on Genius and they're like, I know what I heard.
Yeah, you know how I separate those people? When you cannot communicate your perspective, the minute you default to a link, you're done. Like, I'll just check out this YouTube. Nope. I'm not watching somebody else tell me what you think, but whatever.
That's interesting. I mean, to me, I think a link is useful that way. It's useful in some situations because otherwise, like, I don't want to give the impression that, like, this is my original idea.
Well, no, you just should be able to articulate how you feel about a thing. You can use that as, you know, if you're writing a paper, of course, this is like your references, sure. But if someone pushes back on your theory and they're like, hey, watch this video. Like, no, you tell me. You know what I'm saying? Like, now, if I'm interested and I want more information, and it's, I think it's different. Like, if it's you and I and you're like, Armand, here, watch this video. That's different because I know you can articulate that. We're friends. We can whatever, whatever. But if it's just Joe Schmo who hops in my mentions, he doesn't have a profile picture and he's really, really, really abrasive, but he can't articulate himself. That's what I'm like, come on, I'm not rolling. My Facebook feed is full of, my Facebook video feed is full of dog rescue videos.
That's a good thing.
I don't know, but I don't know what I'm like. I've never been like an animal lover, so I don't know what this is doing. I don't know what this means for me that I'm like enjoying myself watching them.
So you don't sit there on Instagram and just look at photos and videos of very happy dogs?
No. Okay. Usually, whenever you retweet them on Twitter from your other account, I'll watch those. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what's happening is everybody that you are friends with has just shared so much dog content because, you know, the internet is mostly dogs at this point, that it's just like Facebook's like, oh, well, you must want to see this.
Maybe. Perhaps. I wouldn't fight that.
You think Facebook's in the pocket of Big Dog? You think that you think you think Big Dog's been spending on all the advertising?
I'm just imagining like a dog with like $100 bill under his paw slided across the table.
It's a Pen and Pixel album cover.
I need to find, does anybody have a Pen and Pixel, like a graphic design guy who can do Pen and Pixel style? If you do, please send them to me on social media somewhere. Please.
You got some ideas for our project? Is that what's going on?
No. This is for Kairos 2.
Oh.
Yeah, because I wanted it on Kairos 1, but my graphic designer was like, absolutely not. I will not do it. I was like, all right. I need to find somebody else then.
You're like, yes. No, really. Can you put the really fake like shine sparkle around the diamond? Like that's what.
Just put a necklace, put a long gold chain around the egg and have two girls in bikinis like crouched next to them.
Oh, please. Man. You really need like the egg on the egg as a pendant. Wow.
You know, I wish I had that kind of money to like do that. Now, remember when rappers used to like buy chains based off of the name of their album or something like that?
Right.
I wish I could get an egg chain. That would be dope. It would be really big and gaudy. And I wear it. It wouldn't be T-Pain gaudy, but it might be like QB chain, like Nas gaudy.
I was going to say like Ghostface gaudy.
No, that's too much.
Too much?
Yeah.
QB chain. Okay.
QB chain was, it was like, it was big, but it wasn't like, is your neck okay?
It's pretty big.
It was. But Ghostface was like, it was like maybe a step under Slick Rick.
Right.
It was really bad. And he had stuff on his wrists.
I was going to say, you could get the egg as like a coming off your bracelet.
Supreme Clientele era, 2000 era Ghost is definitely on our bracket.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Mm. I've been on a weird kick lately just between like 80s pop, 80s R&B, and like 2000, 2001 hip hop. So just ran Supreme Clientele back a few weeks ago. I think we've given that album its flowers, but I just want to reiterate how amazing that album is. It's his best album. I like messing with you. See how quiet you got?
No, I'm just, you know, I'm letting you have your moment. It's fine.
All right, you got it. Nope, let's move on.
No. We have talked about that album ad nauseum on the show. Yeah. It's a great album. We have a lot to talk about.
A lot, man. A whole lot. Where do you want to start?
Your man, Sean Corey Carter.
Yes.
Put his entire back catalog back on streaming services.
Let's first wish him a happy birthday.
Happy 50th.
Turned 50 years old. It's crazy. So to celebrate in true Jay-Z fashion, he decides to give us a gift.
It's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year round.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, Clark. He put all of his music back on streaming services.
Aside from Tidal, where they've always been. But
it's always been on Tidal. Hold on. I don't know if Best of Both Worlds is on streaming services.
Let me tell you, that album's going to get, if Jay-Z knows what's good for him, that album's just going to get like removed from the internet. It's like, what's the Best of Both Worlds album? I don't know what that is.
Was that you? Because I saw it recently when I was, or earlier this morning, actually, I was listing, my boy asked me to list my favorite song from each Jay-Z album, which is actually a really good idea. I went and looked at the track listing for Best of Both Worlds, and the song, I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but one of the songs is called like Naked, and then in parentheses, the subtitle is Little Girls.
Yeah. I know. It's on Spotify.
Okay.
It's R. Kelly, Jay-Z.
It's on what?
It's on Spotify, but it's the artist listed. It says R. Kelly and then Jay-Z. So it's not, you know, I don't know if that screws up how you search for it or not, but.
I just see the.
Looks like it's might be under R. Kelly mostly. I'm not really sure.
Oh. You still got 4 million streams a month.
Yeah.
That Robert Kelly. I don't see it. It's not on there.
That's weird. Hold on.
The 12 Nights of Christmas. I want to hear. Okay, bet. Let me see what this is. I want to hear this R. Kelly Christmas album.
Do you?
It's
You know what song you don't want to hear?
Hmm.
Mrs. Santa Claus.
That's exactly the song I want to hear.
Or Christmas Lovin'. Or Flying on My Sleigh.
Nope. Definitely want to hear Christmas Lovin'. Well, here's a doc. All these songs are grayed out for me.
Oh, interesting. I wonder if maybe it's not available in the U.S.
No, because when Jay's discography got taken off Spotify the first time, I still had some of the albums that I had saved there, but they were grayed out. Mm. So I don't know. I don't think it's an international thing. I think Jay made a phone call. To be honest with you, I feel like Jay made a phone call. Was
like,
no, take this.
No, no, it's not happening.
Yeah.
He's like, are who?
Yeah, I don't know who.
Robert.
I don't know
who?
Anybody don't, named Robert or Kelly.
Yeah.
I know Kelly Clarkson. I know Kelly Rowland. That's my wife's best friend.
So he put the streaming services back. He put his back catalog up on streaming services.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Me neither.
Jay likes making money. He's going to make more money this way. Yes. He will stay more culturally relevant because if you're not on streaming services, you don't exist.
Yeah, we also need to talk about Aaliyah with that too, right?
Yes, it seems like her back catalog is coming to streaming services in January.
January 1st. Yep.
I think it might be like January 20th or some random day. Like, I don't know what it is, but anytime. Anyway, sometime in the month of January, it's coming back. I hope it's the entire Blackground catalog though, because that means the Timbaland and Magoo record.
That's what I want.
Yeah, because
Aaliyah's last album and Welcome to Our World. I need both of those on streaming services.
Oh, you need her. You need her second album on streaming services too.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
One in a Million, Four Page Letter.
Sure.
Classic. These are classics.
Yeah, I'm not saying. Yeah, I'm not saying the album's whack. I'm just like looking forward to her last album.
Mm.
I really enjoyed her last album. But yeah, so. Okay, so Jay puts everything back on streaming services. Everyone bows and kisses the ring, and Jay's amazing and wonderful. And I guess, like, I just, when I saw it, I was like, you made such a fuss about taking it off of streaming services. What changed to make you want to just go ahead and put it back on and make a big deal out of them returning?
I mean, we haven't, so you and I talked about this a bit, but we haven't really heard much about if Tidal's doing well or not. So that's a thing.
Right.
But also, like, you know, it's kind of the wrestling rule, right? Where like you can make a change, but if you like wait long enough, you can always go back and change it up and make the new change a new thing.
Yes.
So Jay is just, you know, he is successfully navigating this weird thing he's had with Tidal. You know, seems like he's doing just fine.
Yeah. I guess my question was, okay, well, how good is Tidal doing? Is Jay looking to sell his stake in Tidal? Or does he recognize that, like, you notice, like, catalog exclusivity is no longer a thing with these artists, right? There aren't people who are signed to Apple Records and Spotify Entertainment anymore. Not like it was a few years ago. Right.
Yeah, they've mostly stopped that kind of exclusivity. You know what really did it was how angry Universal Def Jam, is it still Universal Def Jam? Got at Apple for the Frank Ocean Blonde situation. Where you know, Endless was delivered as his last album, then he turns right around and, you know, signed. It's not, he's not signed to Apple, right? Apple's not distributing. I mean, they are in terms of like it's on Apple streaming service, but like it's not a traditional label at all. It's more like Apple's like, we'll give you money if you let us put your album here exclusively. And Frank Ocean's like, yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
They got really mad about that, like incredibly mad. And so at some point, I have to imagine they really tried to put the kibosh on this.
Yeah.
Because it also, I mean, it the streaming services getting into that game really is just like a worst case scenario for labels, right? Because on the one hand, the way that artists, because like it encourages artists to be more independent, which means they don't need, which means the label's not getting a cut of that money, right? The whole way, I mean, whatever money you do get through streaming, right? The label wants their cut, which means they want it on as many platforms as possible because they want you to go tour and do a whole thing. And getting like an influx of money from a streaming service to make it exclusive, like it just doesn't work for their business model. Plus it's control and everything else. And ultimately like Apple and Spotify and Tidal, like these labels have, you know, they have to have these labels play ball with them.
Right.
Right. And like, you know, Apple has enough deep pockets. Maybe they could say, yeah, whatever, we'll make this thing so successful, you'll want it on here anyway. But like Tidal is so small that like in terms of their number of subscribers, like, you know, sure they've got like, you know, the sort of celebrities as investors and stuff. So it's very high profile. So maybe that gets them something. But like, you know, if Universal decided they wanted to cut off Tidal, Tidal would be like, ugh, what do we have to do to get back on here? They have no, like, what weight do they have aside from, can Jay call a favor? You know what I mean?
Rap radar.
Right. But I mean, like, they don't have that weight. Whereas like Spotify, I mean, Spotify has serious weight.
That much is clear based off of, the Wrapped analytics that they roll out every year for people to share.
Yeah, super smart. Apple finally got in on this too. They copied what Spotify did, which you would expect. Apple was notably absent from this sort of end of the year wrap up thing. Apple's pretty bad in general at understanding that people want cool stuff that they can share.
Mm-hmm.
Like Apple could be so much better at that, right? Yeah. Like, it's funny, like, and like, if you have an iOS device, if you open up the Photos app now, they've gotten like really amazingly good at like, oh, here's some like cool memory from like 5 years ago, and we picked all the best pictures and blah blah blah. Like,
yeah.
And those are sometimes you look at those, you're like, wow, that's awesome. But like, package that up into it, make it super easy for someone to put that on Instagram or Snapchat.
Right.
Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. So yeah. So we're talking about streaming services, Tidal, and Jay-Z. I mean, for me, I just assumed it was as simple as Jay had been looking for a good excuse to get his stuff back on the rest of the streaming services, and trying to roll out some hashtag Ho50 thing was a good enough excuse as any. Do people on the internet know that they don't have to do free promo for artists if you're like, you're not actually obliged to do that? Like, you don't have to do that? But like, everybody on the internet decided that day, they were like, you know what? It's Jay-Z day. It's like, okay.
You know, yeah.
Has he not had, I mean, Jay's gotten his flowers, y'all. We can, it's fine.
He is the, I heard someone recently compare him to, I heard it laughed because it was just so crazy. Jay's my goat.
Yeah.
But they said that he is the Martin Luther King of this generation. And I was like, all right, do we know what Martin Luther King did?
Martin Luther the King?
Yes. Oh, I thought she was somebody else. Yeah. But nah, I'm cool. I don't know. It also showed me just how, you know, God, I mean, this is the biggest lesson for me that I learned as an artist, is like, streaming rules the world. And, you know, people were excited to play albums that many people likely already owned. So, you know, gone are the days of, you know, those of us who know how to rip CDs. Like, nobody knows what rip means. Is it on Spotify? No, yeah. then I'm never going to hear it.
Right.
Never going to hear it. I was on my Bandcamp the other day, and I was looking at analytics, and I was going through and listening to stuff. And I'm like, man, this is really like, you know, 7 or 8 years worth of music that a lot of people have not heard.
Right.
So it's about to change, but
okay.
I digress. All right. Where else are we going?
I see your man, Marshall Mathers.
Yep.
Is in a little bit of a beef.
He's in a tiff. Yep.
With esteemed rapper. Let me look up this name. Wait, Nick Cannon? What's going on? Could you explain?
Esteemed rapper. Right? Yeah. So I guess, okay. So the Fat Joe record. Did we review the Fat Joe record last week?
No, we didn't.
Okay. So Fat Joe and Dre from Kool & Dre dropped a project this week called Family Ties. There is an Eminem song on there. Okay. Wait. To run it back. I guess, so Nick Cannon has like a radio show or vlog, and I believe T.I. was a guest, and T.I. was talking about how great M was, and, you know, Nick was being really passive aggressive about it, about M, and, you know, kind of alluding to, you know, their problems in the past. So I guess M caught wind on the Fat Joe album. He spits a verse. Verse is actually really good. We need to talk about Eminem and, you know, artists like him who just need direction outside of their circle, because this verse on this Fat Joe album, he was given clear, simple instructions. He followed them, and oh, what do you know? Like, people enjoy it. And he starts talking about Mariah and talks about Nick. And maybe 3 or 4 days later, Nick drops a freestyle with some of his Wild and Out goons/Smack URL battlers who are now cosplaying as the Outlaws to Nick Cannon's Tupac.
They're called the Black Squad.
Yeah, the Black, because that's what they're really called on the show, which is crazy. And then today they put out another diss record.
Yeah.
Drake is really... Really, people are really hitting that. I waited 4 days. Where y'all at? People are really owning that. So yeah, that's where we are with it.
M has yet to respond, except for on Twitter.
Because there was a line in the record about Nick having or Nick knowing about Eminem doing some things, and it being on video, and that his chauffeur had the video. And Eminem had to pay him off, and then he fired him after he paid him off. And yeah, just some real, you know, as Dame Dash will call it, chatty patty stuff, which is, you know, what people do in battles. I know, but that's what they do.
Well, no, I mean, let's just be honest. Like, he was being homophobic, like, call it whatever you want, right? But he's talking about, like, he's taunting Eminem, saying that his chauffeur got a video of Eminem doing a gay sexual act, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so interesting that, like, the reaction, because the reaction that you gave me is what I've seen on Twitter broadly is, like, once again, just like what we saw with Pusha and Drake, people seemingly think, like, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's a beef, so, you know, no rules apply. And it's like, cool. Like, I guess I don't know. Why is it that when rappers beef, all of a sudden they resort to talking like 14-year-old boys on a playground? Do you know what I mean?
Because usually the reasons for rap beef are very immature, so they tend to spawn immature responses.
That's fair.
Like, there's very few, like, you could tell when the really good rap beefs usually have like a legitimate gripe. They're either legitimate gripe or it's just, I'm better than you. But if somebody's offended, it's usually over like a girl or, you know, a misunderstanding. They thought you said something and you didn't, or you passive aggressively, you know, engage them. Like, it's something that's really petty. That's why it ends really quickly too. You know, we had a conversation, you'll be good. Cause it's not real beef, but you dedicate a lot of time and attention and things to that. So yeah, that's why. I mean, Eminem had a legitimate beef with someone that, like, you could understand why he was upset with that person? Or was it like really petty stuff that could have been resolved? It's why hip hop gets on its grown man, right? Because adults don't have to tell you that they're being adults. They just adult.
Mm.
So, you know, if I have to tell you I'm getting my grown man on, then that typically indicates that any other time I tend to lean on the immature side.
Mm. So M has this reputation as this, like, person who you just, don't you dare. Don't. Oh, my God. I can't believe. Oh, man. You can't go after Eminem.
Lord have mercy. Yes.
Is that an earned reputation?
No.
Okay. What have we seen from Eminem over the past 15 years to give us any indication that he's going to like that, really good music is going to come out of this.
Or a really good diss record or something scathing that would end somebody's career.
Right.
Nothing. Literally, if we go back from the beginning, His first rap beef was who? It started off with like Christina Aguilera and Moby and Britney Spears and whoever was on TRL. That was his target. So for him to have this story of came up in the Rap Olympics, he was battling. And then like you would assume that typically, and I come from the battle arena, so people who battle want to battle the best so that there's no confusion as to who's the top dogs. You know, very much a pride and ego thing. Okay, sure. But when you get to the top and you start picking with people who don't even rap, but, you know, he still has this reputation because, oh, he was in the Rap Olympics and he was doing this and whatever, whatever. So his first real rap beef was who? Was it Everlast?
Maybe.
I'm serious. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I want to say it was Everlast. You know what? Let's do a live. Go ahead and hit your bingo boards. See if we can find a history of Eminem rap beefs. There we go. All of the rappers' beefs from Mariah Carey, from Machine Gun Kelly and Mariah Carey to Joe Budden and Ja Rule. Okay. So we've got Christina Aguilera. Oh, that's right. He did. Remember when he battled Cage? Remember Cage?
Yep.
there was that. I don't remember that enough to, okay. Cage responded on the song And So Kitties, where he mentioned Eminem's rhyming skills and referred to Slim Shady as a bee lady.
Cool.
Okay. Right. That's 1999 for you for sure. Okay, so Everlast is the first one I remember. Eminem lost that.
Yeah.
He lost that. Everlast got him. Whitey's Revenge was really, really, I remember it being scathing at the time. It was Insane Clown Posse. That doesn't count. Benzino, the only clear win, a clear win for M, because Nail in the Coffin is a really, really good diss record, right?
Yeah.
And The Sauce, it was good too. It was a good moment. Cannabis doesn't count because they were kind of like, Cannabis was going at M. M wasn't responding, but then I remember there was like some records that leaked. And that was one of the records was his song that responded called Canna B for the kids. But, you know, that doesn't count because to me, a part of it is you have to put the record out. If it leaks, it doesn't count. And I don't even remember that. I remember the diss record being really hokey, too. OK, here we go. Ja Rule. Go ahead. You going to say something?
No, I'm waiting for you to like, at what point has he ever like gone after someone who was on his level?
Correct. Ja Rule is somebody, but again, so up until this point, he is going at people that he is infinitely better than, but he's not winning like convincingly outside of Benzino. So he loses to Everlast. Cannabis doesn't count. Now you're at Ja Rule. Ja Rule has Loose Change. And Loose Change is it's a pretty good diss record. And I don't remember any of the Ja Rule. The only thing I remember about the Eminem Ja Rule diss records was Busta Rhymes calling Ja Rule Jeffrey on Hail Mary. Doesn't count.
Oh man, the less we remember about the Eminem Tupac obsession era, the better right. off I am.
What was the name of that album? Loyal to the Game or something like that?
That sounds about right.
Okay. Nick Cannon and Mariah Carey. The Warning was a good diss record, but it was about a guy who really liked a girl and she cut ties. They had whatever they had. She cut ties, moved on. He did not, and he was upset about it. I'm not rolling. Nope. Limp Bizkit. I forgot he dissed Limp Bizkit. He sure did. Nope. Moby. Nope. Will Smith. Nope. Here we go. Joe Budden. So, Joe, we could say it was Joe came out with Slaughtermouse, which was kind of like a passive aggressive tribute. Because it was the end of the Slaughterhouse on Shady Records thing, though I think they're still signed, which is hilarious. But it was like, I honor you, but like you tripping right now, which is pretty much the theme of the song. And then more recently, maybe a year or two ago, based off of Eminem or Joe's feelings about the song with Beyonce, what was the name of that song? Walk on Water. Says he doesn't like the song. Joe Budden goes in on his podcast, breaks down the whole Shady situation. Eminem responds with an interview with Sway, and then he puts out something on one of those albums that everybody hated. But like really didn't go at Joe. And Joe is somebody, if we're talking about formidable lyrical foes, God, that's such a 90s term. I think so far, based on this list, Joe's number one. If you're going to rap with somebody who's top tier, just in terms of bars, maybe not like clout, as the youth say.
Yeah.
You would go at Joe. Did not go, went at Joe, but was just like very just pity pat. Machine Gun Kelly. A lot of people have Eminem losing that battle.
He kind of loses by engaging, right?
Not that he loses by engaging. He loses because he engages and does not kill.
Mm.
Machine Gun Kelly gets a punch in. It's like me fighting a 12-year-old and leaving with maybe a bloody lip or something.
Yeah.
So I still win the fight, but like, did I really win? So that's a loss. And that's it. So you've got Eminem as one of the greatest battle rappers ever, has not been in a legit battle with an artist. And somebody, you know, listener to the show tweeted me earlier and was like, well, brought up the Rhymefest battle from 99. Like, we're not talking Rap Olympics. And if we want to talk Rap Olympics, Eminem was exposed as someone who was using pre-writtens and then would have a line or two for each person he was battling. So in a, you know, this is freestyle, never written, that's forbidden era. So I'm not really rolling with the, you know, sure, Rap Olympics, cool. But you're getting into this, you're jumping into this pool of sharks and you just have not even tried to test anybody who was willing to engage you.
Right.
That wasn't a pop star. So just miss me with this, Eminem, you're in trouble now. No, Nick Cannon's not in trouble. Both of these diss records aren't good, but Nick Cannon's not in trouble. And if Eminem comes out with a diss record and he shouldn't, it's to your point, Doc, he's just going to lose for engaging. He loses based off the tweets. Because if you're a battle rapper and someone smacks you and says, I want to battle, and you respond with a tweet, you lose. You're losing. So I'm not rolling. Don't at me on Twitter. Don't do it, because I'm not rolling. He's not this super crazy. No.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about him?
No, I'm good.
Oh, man. I think we got to get real somber here. You ready to talk about Juice WRLD?
Yeah, I am.
So Juice WRLD Sunday, he was, I guess it was Saturday night into Sunday morning. I was flying back from California on a private jet to Chicago's Midway Airport. Actually, let me pull up the Tribune article so I can get all this right, because the Tribune has a good article on it. So he is he's on the plane with you know, roughly 12 people. Security guards, you know, girlfriend, managers, all that sort of stuff. And actually, this is not the article I want. Sorry. Wait, why is this so hard to find? There we go. Sorry about that. So anyway, he's flying cross country. He is met at officers and agents at the hangar at Midway. They were tipped off by, we found out, the pilot. That Juice WRLD and the more importantly the plane had quote unquote contraband. The search that the police did turned up 41 vacuum sealed bags of weed, 6 bottles of codeine, 2 pistols, actually 3 pistols, high capacity magazines, metal piercing bullets, etc. As they're searching, he has a seizure. And when his girlfriend was asked if he had taken any drugs, she replied that he had taken Percocet and has a drug problem, which, if you listen to Juice WRLD's music, not exactly the most stunning admission. They were able to revive him, but he passed later that morning. Did that about right for all the facts? I get that right?
Yeah, there's some other little details that have been coming out, but for the most part, yes, that seems to be the story as of right now.
Any other interesting details?
Less about the details, but just more about like the questions that are starting to come up.
Well, yeah, and you know, of course, people are immediately gonna look, point to the fact that, you know, he had a seizure. He seemed to be on Percocet at the time, and you know, he has rapped about drug use certainly extensively, and so people look at this and go, oh, more drugs than hip-hop, what's going on?
Yeah.
I had a thought today, and I talked to you a little bit about it, but it's so interesting how like history repeats itself, right? Just, I mean, obviously with differences, but like, so like 22 years ago, so 1997, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hip hop was obsessed with obviously, because the culture had just lost, Tupac and Biggie. They were obsessed with this idea of like, how do we stop this?
Yeah.
Because people were like, there's this generation that is going to be gone too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And like, here we are 22 years later. And, there's a really good rundown in Vulture. This article came out earlier today about all of the young rappers who are either in prison, about to go to prison, or who have died.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's like a ridiculous list, right? TK, YNW Melly, Kodak Black, NBA Youngboy, 6ix9ine, mm-hmm. 03 Greedo, Mac Miller, Nipsey, Lil Peep, Triple X, now Juice WRLD. Like, if you're a young hip hop fan, it's like this entire section of people who you might be fans of is just, they're just not here anymore. Or they're not here, or they're about to go away for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I realized, and this is something I hope I talked about on the show before, but I really realized this morning, like, you hear people, when we were growing up, the defense that was always used, and I'm sure if you ever had to explain to your parents, why you listen to the music you listen to, because they thought it was, too violent or too derogatory or too whatever, mm-hmm. you'd be like, oh, it's just art.
Right.
And like, I think a lot of people with privilege, and I include myself in that, like to say it's just music because we can separate art from reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't think Juice WRLD was able to separate. Like, they weren't separate things for him. You know what I mean? Like, we could listen to Future rap about Molly and Percocet,
mm-hmm.
and be separated from it. But like, mm-hmm. Future clearly isn't. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to not talk about the drugs, but the drugs are just one piece of it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he was on drugs. It's not good. Like, we all know that. But like, why was he on that? And is this anything new? Or is it just that like, actually, it's a lot easier to get certain kinds of drugs now? Or is it that we have rappers now who feel like they actually can rap about their substance abuse in a way that you probably couldn't 25 years ago because it wasn't cool to,
mm-hmm.
right? 25 years ago, if you rapped about drugs, you would smoke weed. But like, if you were depressed and you were taking something to manage that depression, you weren't going to rap about that.
Yeah.
With few exceptions, right? I mean, Big would rap about being depressed, but in a like, I'm chasing death kind of way. You know what I mean? Not in a like, oh, but I'm drinking to hide the pain. Like that was few and far between. And so, yeah, I'm struck by this idea of like how history repeats itself and how we keep coming back around to these questions and what role, like, I think like how I look back at how I would have handled this as like a 16-year-old,
mm-hmm.
versus how I process this as a 36-year-old. And you have two kids who, yep. and you've talked on the show before about how they processed earlier deaths. And so how are you responding to all this?
Okay. So before I answer your question, the one thing that was rumored to have happened is while the police were searching is when Juice WRLD just took some drugs. Did you share that already? Did you say that?
I said that his girlfriend said that he was on Percocet, but you're saying it's rumored that he took it sort of like if you've ever seen Goodfellas, right? When the police raid and they're like flushing everything down toilets, he was instead of flushing down toilets, he was like taking them all.
Correct. He took them all and had an immediate seizure. That's the rumor. I'm sure like dude's never, doesn't seem like the type to get in trouble. He had no previous, criminal record. If you find out the feds are waiting for you, you have all these drugs and all these things on you and you panic.
Yeah.
You don't know how to, move in that. You know what I'm saying? Like I have questions, man. Like, I have simple, so small questions like, why is Juice WRLD on a private jet?
Because he makes a lot of money.
Does he? I know he's super successful, but is he like private jet successful? I know he has a lot of streams, but like,
I mean, these are all like leased private jet. Like, he doesn't own a private jet. Like, he
was, of course,
a private jet ride.
Sure. So maybe because it was so late, you know, they just decided to commandeer a jet or whatever, however the label or, you know, whoever commandeered that or whatever. So sure, possible, you know? And who is he? If he's clearly never been in trouble before, those are not just his drugs. Just we need these drugs to function and to, you know, have a good time with, right?
41 bags of weed is a lot of weed.
That's a lot. I mean, did you see the picture of like all the suitcases and stuff open?
No, I didn't.
Oh boy. There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
I mean, and to have the guns and
yeah,
like, you know what I'm saying? So now I'm like, now, of course, I'm thinking, I've seen too many mob movies. I'm like, well, who are you moving for?
Right. The guns, you know, you can maybe chalk up to over-aggressive security because he had two security officers with him or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, but fine. But it's a lot of weed.
It's a lot of drugs for you and five of your, you know, you got five weed carriers, but
right.
you might need a couple more. Yeah, this is clearly what they're for. So and on top of that, it's like, yo, that's what the purpose of the weed carrier is, right? Somebody else is supposed to take that charge, not Juice WRLD. So why did he panic? Like, just there's just some stuff that it just doesn't sit right with me. And in making that panic decision, because that's not really your bag, that's not where you go to. Like, did he get put up to that? You know what I'm saying? Is somebody holding something over his head, or is somebody in a position of power or a seeming position of power? Like, you know, kind of using him as, you know, a transport of drugs. He couldn't say no, gets into a situation. He doesn't think about, oh man, one of my friends could take this charge, because I'm sure it was like, oh yeah, nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, and now he panics, makes a decision. That decision caused him to lose his life. Like, that sucks. Despite whatever's true, whatever's not true, whatever speculation, at the end of the day, like, he's not here. That sucks. So to answer your question, you know, I immediately text my nephews and my daughter, and none of them were affected.
Mm.
You know, my oldest nephew actually was pretty remorseless, and I kind of had to like get on him, like, yo, you're tripping. And I asked my daughter, she said she was fine. She didn't really, you know, they liked his song, because I remember a couple summers ago they would play his song a lot, but you know, none of her friends were, she wasn't consoling any of her friends. So, you know, I ended up going to church that day, and lately I've been going to Taylor's church, and Taylor spoke on it, and he just beautifully articulated, you know, just the call and the need that we need to have towards that generation, because they are losing so many people. And I just lost it. Like, I was just in church crying like a baby. Cause I felt the weight of like the kids who were dealing with this stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And so I FaceTimed my daughter later that day. We were just talking. I was just asking how she was doing or whatever. And she was fine. She was cool. And I was like, do you realize how much death you guys deal with? Do you realize how many artists you've watched either go to jail for a long period of time or die or get killed? And then not only that, like, for some people, you actually saw them die. You know what I'm saying? Like, people saw Nipsey die. People saw X's lifeless body in the car. You know what I'm saying? Like, we are every day watching this opioid epidemic, this pill problem. And we are watching these kids on live, like, every day just slowly slip away into that habit. And the older generation's response is, yo, you know, when we was coming up, the drug dealers were the rappers, and now it's the junkies. Okay, so now the junkies are the rappers. Does that excuse you from not having any sort of like remorse or empathy, sympathy for them? Like, that was what pissed me off, because now we can get into like Joyner Lucas and the morality police, who is all of a sudden showing up. Because it goes back to your question, Doc, like, how do we stop this? How do we stop this is not the morality police. The morality police shows up and says, you guys shouldn't be doing this. How dare you, you know, talk about this lifestyle and hype it up. And then when people die, like, you can't say that. The rappers who rap about the craziness and the drugs and the guns and the girls and the money and all of the things that people get destructive with, because I won't call the things destructive, but people will take them and do destructive things either under the influence or with those things in their possession, like you, that's what's bothering me. That's what's bothering me.
I mean, in general, right, in America, we look at drug use as like a personal failing.
Yes.
And so I'm not trying to put words in people's mouth, but like in general, a lot of people, I think, look at something like this and go, boy, shouldn't have taken drugs. And that's it, you know? And it's like, okay, could we be a bit more gracious as to how we approach this? Just, you know, spitballing here.
Absolutely.
Like, no, we always blame the user in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Go ahead.
You know, it's weird because then I think about the 80s and I think about the crack epidemic and you think about the mindset of people who say, I had no choice. I had to sell drugs to feed my family because X, Y, and Z, right? Like nobody ever challenges that narrative. Like you didn't have to. That was a choice. So if the user chooses to buy the drugs that you sell, like why is the person who's selling the drugs, why are they lauded and put in this position of they're celebrated, but the junkie is looked down upon. And now it becomes what was the conversation I saw the other day? Is addiction a disease?
Yes, it's a disease.
Does it matter? Does it matter? Okay, it is. Now what? Or it isn't. Now what? Especially now when all of the artists and one of the songs on one of the projects on my Definitive 15, I put it on the list because it ushered this in. Mm. It is the definitive soundtrack of this type of music. And Juice WRLD himself said, when I was 11 or 12 years old, I was listening to this artist and he was drinking lean and I thought that's what I needed to do. So I started doing it. We're here now. Influence again. I want to go back to another point that you made earlier, Doc. You talked about people who say it's just music. You know why that's BS? You know why that's malarkey? Not that you're, because this is what people do.
Malarkey.
But this is just, we all do malarkey, sure. But no, not to say that you are wrong about people who justify by saying it's just music or who can separate that. You know what's weird about that, Doc, is that we also come from the keep it real era. So you can't say it's just music and then say, oh, you got to keep it real, or they not really living the life that they talk about in their music. Well, it's got to be one or the other.
No, hip hop has really thrived on the ability, especially like hip hop from our era. It's like it's maintaining that era, that aura of like authenticity right up until the last second when they like want to wink into the camera and be like, but don't worry, it's not too real. Ah, but it's real. But it's not too real.
I want you to make me believe that you'll shoot somebody. Don't actually shoot somebody. That's too much.
Right.
That's trash. That's trash. That is so trash. I'm not rolling, man. I'm not rolling. So I'll say this though, like to, you know, I often, every once in a while, I'll get DMs from Christians who will ask me how I'm able to rationalize doing this show and then still with my belief system. And if you've listened to the show long enough, you've heard me at times where I've kind of like struggled with that. His death makes me realize just how much this is necessary. Like there is no way for you to separate hip hop in the church because hip hop culture is popular culture. And if we are to reach the people with the gospel, like we have to understand hip hop culture and we have to not be ashamed that we came up in this culture. That it influences how we walk, how we talk, how we dress. And in a lot of ways, how we see the world, how we see women, how we see money. And we have to allow God to like unravel that and redefine it for us. But like embracing and accepting that, you know, for much of my life, I thought this way and that maybe hip hop was the catalyst that led me to believe that. Like, it's not like, that's it. We cannot celebrate. Taylor said this so beautifully on Sunday. He said, you cannot celebrate Kanye West and then not lament over Juice WRLD. You can't like it. If you're going to embrace hip hop culture and you're a believer, you got to take it all in. You got to take in the syringes. You got to take in the lean. You got to take in anything good that you take in any of the redemptive parts, the beats that people try to justify, like the beats. You also got to take in, yeah, it's a good beat. You got to take in all the other stuff with it. Doc and I, and then on another level of that, Doc and I have talked about growing older in hip hop. And there's another album on my list that's going to talk about that. Because hip hop is now older. We're older. We have families. You know, we don't see things the way that we did 10, 15 years ago. God, when we started this podcast, I think people who have listened to us from episode one have probably seen both of us grow up immensely, significantly. We're just in a really, really interesting time. And I guess to your original point, Doc, like, yeah, like, do we have conversations on how to stop this? Or, do you know, is it too late to stop it? Because it's so inundated in hip hop culture currently. Like, what's the next step to make sure that another kid doesn't die? Because this is going to keep happening.
I mean, there are, so this is super boring, right? But there are like actual like problems, like, and in America, I mean, huge problems. This is not revolutionary, but you're saying like the huge problems in America with the amount of, first of all, the amount of drugs that people have access to, right? Like opioids are, it's called an opioid epidemic for a reason, right?
Right.
But then you also have to wonder, like, why are people reaching for these drugs?
Right.
It's not a rap problem. Now, there are rappers who have glorified this. I think it'd be stupid to say that they haven't, or at least maybe glorify is not the right word. There are rappers who have exposed people to this stuff who didn't know about it before.
Right.
And you can do all the, you know, I mean, it's the thing, right? It's funny. You know, our childhood was marked by the battle for folks like C. Dolores Tucker and others to put parental advisory stickers and to really have there be like a barrier of entry to kids getting hip hop music that glorified sex and violence and drugs, right? Now it's all in streaming.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. And nobody's flipping that switch over to eliminate explicit content from this.
Because it's an all or nothing. Right. Yep. It used to be that like as a parent, theoretically, you could like curate what you did and decide your kid to not buy.
Correct.
Now, in practice, for many of us, it was a switch. Once my parents stopped caring, they stopped caring.
Yep.
You know, once they let me buy the dog food album as a 12-year-old.
Right.
Like, what's the difference? Like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I mean, but in practice, what it really is, it's like as a parent, unless you are, you know, unless you're going to cut off all the explicit stuff with streaming, it's not like you get to make a song by song decision. Mm-hmm. And then even if you did that on streaming, do your kids have the internet? Congratulations. What are you going to stop on YouTube? Keep them off YouTube altogether? Maybe. Good luck with that. So like,
I'm just like. My son's mother definitely tries to do that.
Mm.
I mean, and succeeds. Like, just, he will literally say, I can't use YouTube. My mom won't let me. Like, just very, very, and I'm not throwing her under the bus.
No.
But, you know, her parenting style is very much like shield, protect, avoid. Where my daughter, like, we just kind of, we push her into the light. You know, she's exposed to all of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Outside of, you know, regularly checking her phone and all that stuff, like she's pretty liberal in the things that she can entertain. But so dealing with that as a dad is like really, really weird, because you would say that, Doc, right? Like, we wouldn't normally, like, now we can't do it. But there are definitely still parents who are doing that. Now, keep in mind, my son is 10. So, yeah, it's going to be harder for him to engage that stuff. He's got about another 2 years left before we won't have a choice, and he'll have dog food or whatever this generation's version of dog food is. He'll have Shrimp Life 3 in his earbuds.
Right.
And then what? You kind of, okay. So I'll ask this. So if there are any parents of older kids who listen to our show, let me know, like, how do you parent your kids in terms of content that may be, contrary to what your beliefs are in the house? Do you recognize, or do you believe that they're going to hear it anyway? Do you change the culture in the house to where maybe they don't even want to engage that stuff when they go out and their friends listen to it and they don't, they're good? because what you've inundated in them just in your house, like, let me know. Hit us up at CRS Podcast. I'm curious to know how that's working out for you. And I'm not saying that in a sarcastic, passive tone, but like, I really want to know.
One thing that, you know, I think there is also a generation gap at play here, right? Where for folks who are our age or maybe even a little older or, you know, a little younger, but let's just broadly say, like, if you grew up on 90s hip hop, right? We'll put it that way. Mm-hmm. If you came of age during 90s hip hop, you hear Juice WRLD and you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
We do it all the time on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that, no, really. I mean, I have talked in the show before about how, again, history repeats itself. Like, rap is now where rock was, like, I don't know, 80s, 90s roughly, right? Which is to say, it's now big enough that actually there are like multiple subgenres.
Absolutely.
We just don't call it that in hip hop for reasons I haven't figured out. Maybe because radio doesn't matter as much. So there's not like, there's not such a need to divide, right? Because the whole point to dividing rock up is so that you can have different radio stations. Because that's how the 70s worked. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like, you don't need to do that anymore. Because if you're telling me that Juice WRLD makes the same music as Lupe Fiasco, I mean, sure, there are drums.
Right.
Congratulations, drums. That's what you've got, huh? Because, right. Like, I mean, Juice WRLD, it's punk rap, right? It's Juice WRLD, Triple X, Lil Peep. Like, these are the three biggest, quote, we called them SoundCloud rappers 3 years ago. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically punk rap, right? And it emerged much in the same way that punk rock emerged, right? You think about rock in the 70s, it kept getting bigger and more bombastic and more stuff. And there was concept albums and, you know, Queen emerges and they're like, well, we could do this and this and this. Oh, and then, but then like on the side, you've got like punk rock. You've got like basically three guys yelling into a mic. You got the Ramones, right? Three guys in a microphone, basically along with, you know, one person on guitar, one person on bass, one person on drums. And it's just really loud. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because it's a reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because whatever the previous generation did, you got to have your own thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that there is a bit of a generation, like our generation looks at this generation truly dying out and goes, that's a bunch of druggies making music I don't understand.
Yeah.
And like, you need to understand, right? Because what you don't want is a lost generation.
Right.
You know?
You're right. Yeah. I think now the greater charge is to not be so dismissive of this generation. You can not like something, but at least attempt to understand it, because maybe the people who do like it are people that you care about, or they're connected to people that you care about, you know. And for many people, to deny their culture is to deny them. So if you are dismissing Juice WRLD as, you know, drug music, and this person who may not necessarily be into drugs, but they like Juice WRLD, now all of a sudden you're dismissing them. So when you want to engage them on like some real stuff, and you can't do that because you've already dismissed part of what they believe makes up their identity. So you've already got to climb a barbed wire fence to get to them. So I think this is a real opportunity for the elder statesman to be more open and curious about, you know, what the youths are doing.
Anything else you want to say about Juice WRLD?
That conversation wasn't as morbid as I thought it was going, or solemn as I thought it was going to be.
It's a shame.
It absolutely,
which is so obvious to say, but really, like, it's terrible.
It's unfortunate. No, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's extremely sad. It's very, very unfortunate. We've had heavy conversations on this show before, and I'm just glad I don't feel heavy like I have when we had previous conversations. But at the end of the day, a mother lost her son. You know, people have lost a friend, and like that sucks. Death sucks.
I mean, a person lost their life, right? You don't have to have friends to, you know, I'm not saying you're saying that, but like truly, like a person has lost their life and that is a shame.
Sure. Absolutely.
And it was a person who was grappling with problems.
Mm-hmm.
And because we live in a society that has decided, and I say this truly, we have decided that it's apparently, you know, not the worst problem that we're dealing with for people to have access to this sort of stuff.
Because
if we really thought it was the worst thing in the world, we would do more about it.
Absolutely.
So
we enjoy the music too much. We enjoy the other stuff too much. The positives outweigh the negatives.
I don't even mean the music. I mean, just like, you know, it's not like, you know, we decided, okay, you know what? Clearly people are going to abuse opioids, Percocet, all that, off the market. Nah. We might, you know, we'll do some treatment centers, and of course we'll, you know, we'll ramp up, you know, jail offense, you know, jail sentences for people who are doing X, Y, and Z, but like, you could just cut it. But we don't do that.
The prices are way too high.
What do you think? You don't think drug companies are gonna make a big stink? And
I was talking about the song. My bad. Oh, sorry. Don't even get me started on drug companies. Like, oh no. Like, oh no. They make way too much money, and other people make too much money who are connected to them that are in positions of power make too much money. That's not gonna stop that.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.